Well, Julia Child, who is about 5 years shy of 83, is positively heroic to me. She is also the woman who mastered the art of French cooking. She chopped her way into our hearts and into our living rooms, too, and she's still chopping and stirring and beating and folding. And she was in Vancouver this past week to attend the International Association of Culinary Professionals. It was a conference, a get-together, sort of, for the world's best foodies. And Julia, no kidding, was the star attraction. So this is my second chance to talk to you, because the first time we didn't get to meet in person, so let's just pour the tea now. I hope this tea suits you.
It smells and looks perfect.
Is it? Do you have a procedure for drinking tea? I suppose there is some rule to do it. You've got to heat the pot up first and then put the bags in and then... Do you do that? Well, Americans don't do that.
Well, I don't use bags, because my husband likes tea very much, too, and we have a very clean stainless steel saucepan, and we bring that to the boil and measure that, and we measure the tea, and we time it for exactly 5 minutes, and then pour it into a pot, and then it's beautiful tea all day long.
Oh, and then you just heat it up, you mean?
We either just keep it on a hot plate.
Oh, my.
So well, it's always good.
Well, that's good to know. Another tip from Julia Child.
Well, because you've strained it out.
Right. Of course, so the things are not sitting there. Mm-hmm. All right. You are in Vancouver at this year's International Association of Culinary Professionals conference.
Yes.
It's a long title, isn't it?
It is, very long.
And you're the scholar in residence, and what does that mean?
I don't know exactly.
You have to know.
I decided that I would... Well, I haven't done anything but a long, rather long demonstration on bread making. They said I was to do techniques, and I just thought it would be fun to do bread because I like to do it. And it is techniques, because I do it in the food processor, which is such a marvelous machine. It's very easy to get it started. It's what starts on the food processor and then finishes briefly by hand. But the technique was that whether it was whole wheat, rye, or sandwich bread, it's all the procedure is exactly the same. It's just the ingredients that are different. Because my idea is trying to get people to know the basics, and then they know how to cook and don't have to have recipes.
Ah, yes.
Because it's cooking is the basics plus the other building blocks, like making like a bœuf bourguignon, that old-fashioned but delicious stew. If you know how to stew a piece of beef in wine, then all you need to do is to add little braised onions and mushrooms and
move it
bacon bix, and you've got bœuf bourguignon. And some people say, oh, did that recipe, and it took me 2 days to do.
Well, I know, that's... I don't understand.
Really, stop it. How did it take that long to do it?
But when you come here to... Let's say you do a bread-making demonstration.
Yeah.
The people that are at this convention or conference, mm-hmm. they're already... You're preaching to the already trained, aren't you? I mean, these people know what they're doing.
Well, I think everybody has a different method of doing it, which is... Because my method is quite different than a lot of them. I mean, doing it in the food processor, and then also... My training, I learned how to make French bread from Professor Raymond Calvel in Paris, who was a great teacher, and so I used his system. And it seems to be very different, the bread making, from the American system. Somebody said, oh, you're going to do French bread, well, I'll give you some French bread pans. Of course, you don't do bread in a pan. It stands by itself, held in place by its gluten cloak.
It's gluten cloak. How poetic. Cloak. I like that.
Well, it's a very important on the way you form it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to form it in various ways so that you form that gluten cloak and that it holds its in shape. Either it's a long shape or a round shape or a roll shape or whatever.
It doesn't matter what you do to it. It never tastes the same. I talked to Jacques Pepin the other day and we had this same discussion. You can make French bread in North America till you're blue in the face and it won't taste like that stuff.
Well, it's very seldom now in France that you get any good French bread because they overknead it and they're trying to do it fast. And my professor Calvel teaches bread all over the world, and he's taught the Japanese. He says the Japanese are making much better French bread than the French now because the French
wouldn't
don't
you know
take
it, huh?
the time.
Yeah.
And you have all this guff about in a wood-fired oven. I don't think that makes any difference at all. I think it's the length of the rise. And, of course, if you want to be very, very technical, I suppose you could have the water and the flour and so forth. It's mainly the amount of time that you've allowed it to rise.
So you can't longer is better, in other words.
Much longer is better. If you try to take a lot of shortcuts, like as in so many things, you end up with not the real thing.
I know, but you can't not... Do you make your own bread? Not all the time.
Well,
you buy bread,
deal.
Don't you?
And I don't buy very much because I enjoy making. I think it's lots of fun, and then you can make it and freeze it.
Yeah.
But it's such fun to do. And then as I said in my demonstration there, I'm glad I'm not a bakery, because if you're a bakery, you really would have to try and seek to make it so it turned out the same way every time.
Every day, I know. That must be just a terrible pressure.
With the home baker, you never know how it's going to be.
Well, if you prefer to make your own bread, you don't seem to care too much about making your own chicken stock anymore. Phew, I feel greatly...
Oh, yes, I do.
Do you? But you said you use canned stuff.
Oh, of course you can. But I think it's... I enjoy cutting up chickens. I like the mechanics of cooking. I could have been a butcher with great pleasure. But I think here you collect all these necks and bones and things and then just boil up a chicken stock when you have time and keep it in the freezer.
You like cutting up? That's a pretty funny image. You have to admit, as I like to chop up chickens.
Well, but it's and you do it much better than it's at the supermarket. Because if you're at the supermarket, if you get the leg thigh, you're not getting that little oyster at the back of the back, because they don't take the time to do that. If you do it yourself, you have the oyster in front and in back of where the back joint is.
I don't know what you're talking about, oyster. Do you mean like the little part that sticks out at the back of the chicken?
No, and where the chicken joint joins the small of the back, there's a nice little nut of meat just above that and just below that.
And it's the shape of an oyster,
tender.
You mean?
Yes, it's very tender and very good.
Mm.
Yes.
Is there anything in this world that you really avoid cooking?
Well, I'll cook most anything.
Yeah, but there's nothing you hate. I mean, some people...
Bad cooking and bad... Restaurant salad dressing with rotten oil. I hate that. We had a salad at our hotel yesterday.
Day
before we had it, and they had some of this awful bottled French dressing with that hideous oil. I don't know where it comes from.
How dare they serve you that? Do they not know who you are?
They don't know any better.
Oh.
And then we asked for a nice little bottle of olive oil and some lemons, and we just made it delicious. And the salad was so good, just the plain addition of some decent oil.
Do you think people, though, are frightened when you come into their restaurant or their hotel? I mean, can you see them blanch?
No. But I think that professionals are very happy to have other people who love to eat come in so that they've got somebody to cook to. So I know in New York, one of my favorite restaurants is Le Cirque, very expensive. But they have a wonderful chef, and it's mostly a place for, you know, the ladies who lunch, very kind of fancy New York-y type people. And they don't eat anything, you know, those society ladies are mostly anorexics. And I don't know why they go to the Le Cirque to be seen, but we go to eat, and it's marvelous food. And
what do they eat? They eat little bits of
I don't know
fish,
what they eat.
Boiled fish.
Probably boiled fish and maybe a steamed green bean. Well, they have a wonderful chef there, and we've had the most delicious. It's a wonderful place for lunch. And I think they're delighted to have people that come in who want to eat.
Yeah, what has happened to the world?
Well, I don't know. And I think these anorexic-looking people, as someone was calling all the diet food, the anorexic corporations.
Well, the other day, I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy. He's an American. He's from Omaha. His name is Philip Sokoloff, and he is a millionaire, and he bought all those Poison America ads that all the saturated fats and that the stuff that McDonald's was cooking their chips in was beef tallow, and everybody was going to fall over. And
then is he the man who's ruined the McDonald's fried French fries?
He's the guy.
Now. But they were wonderful before. Now the fat tastes bad, and... They're not worth... They used to be great French fries.
Oh, no.
And so what are they doing to our food?
Well, he got them. He took out ads, and he said that if you use this stuff, we'll boycott it.
We should ought to go and slice him up.
I wish you'd be here when I talked to him. I could have used your backup. But, I mean, I don't eat a lot of French fries. But what kind of oil would you use to do French fries?
I know. When we were over in France, as you were, I remember... Somebody who was saying that some of the very best French fries is made out of beef. What do they call that?
Tallow? You mean the...
Yeah, well, beef, and with a little bit of lamb in it also, and that gives them a kind of a lovely rosy brown color and a beautiful taste. But the McDonald's French fries are no good anymore just because they've listened to this fellow whom we should eliminate.
But, you know, what are we going to do? People are so nuts about they don't eat meat anymore. The meat marketers must be out of their minds.
Well, we can only hope that this will pass.
Do you think it will? I mean, you must have seen a thousand food fads come and go.
Well, I think this is one of the worst and the most distressing of people being so afraid of their food now. And I think they're not taking an adult approach to it, don't you? Because we all know what you're supposed to eat. And if people are adult about it, it's just like we were discussing before a little while ago about an unadult approach to cooking, where they haven't learned the basics and they don't know anything. The basics of good eating are certainly, everyone knows about moderation and variety and reasonable amount of exercise, small helpings, but a little something of everything.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yes.
There's nothing you don't eat, then. You haven't gone for this in any way.
I don't eat badly cooked food.
Fine.
And I don't eat processed food.
Ever.
Well, sometimes you have to, but if I have my druthers, I like good, fresh food.
When you do demonstrations, do you send ahead a list to these people of what to purchase so that it's all there?
And
you don't take it with you? Yeah.
And I find that you really have to fully describe what it is, because if... I don't know, you'll order fresh breadcrumbs and then you get something that comes out of a box out of a store and you have to describe how it's done, or if it's an herb, you have to describe what it is. Or if parsley, how it looks when it's fresh.
As opposed to coming out of a shaker?
Well, you don't have here the American Institute of Wine and Food yet, which I hope that you
will have. No, why is that?
Well, because we've
been ignored.
No, you have to decide you want it yourself.
Oh.
It's because it's an institute that is composed of chapters, and if you have, say, 50 really passionate food people, you can start your own chapter of the AIWF.
And then what happens? We have to pay something to join to get a little badge?
No, well,
cap?
Anybody can join. It's only cost $60 for normal people, and then we can have hotels and so forth that pay a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great deal of fun because all of the professionals in the wine and food business are in it, and it's very useful for the community in which it's in, because you have wonderful food events, wine and food tastings and seminars, or how to make chocolate mousse and things like that. But that's everybody's together with it, so that, and then if you belong to the chapter here in Vancouver, you can go down to San Francisco and you're automatically a member there.
So and get to go to a party.
And get to go to a party and meet all the movers and shakers, so that's great.
Is that why you did it? So you could meet all the movers and
shakers?
Exactly,
exactly.
The queen mover and shaker?
And we're also interested in the whole food and wine as a serious discipline and profession, which is becoming now.
Mm-hmm.
It's still in France, as you know, it's still blue collar. But now we have really educated people going into it, and it's a wonderful career. It's a kind of like a big camaraderie. Well, it's like our IACP here, our International Association of Culinary Professionals.
Yeah,
but
that's it.
These are all the teachers and cookbook writers and editors that belong. And it's just awfully nice to meet so many people that are in the same profession, because then you have lots to talk about, and then if you are doing a piece of research and you say, oh, well, I know, there's Vicky over there from Vancouver, and she probably would know, I'll give her a ring. So it's very nice because we're all together in it.
It's a club of sorts.
It's a club, and then we're having a big auction with, you know, where you can buy great bottles of wine or trips to here and there.
Is that so?
And that is to fund, we have a scholarship program so that we can send people over to France if they want to study, or if they have a special research, they could go to Calgary or
Imagine
Texas
it.
Or something.
Get to go to Calgary.
Arthur, for someone in the States, that would be very nice.
I'm going to get
I've never been
Big
to Calgary.
Haven't you? It's just great.
That's what
I hear. Believe me, it is one of the swellest towns. All right, no, it's a dandy place. You travel an awful lot, don't you think?
Well, I travel mostly for our American Institute of Wine and Food. I'm window dressing.
Oh, I see.
For them.
The star attraction.
We want to build up our membership.
Where are you going in the next, let's say, 6 months? Do you have a clue? Are you going to ever stop, stay still?
Well, I'm going to Cleveland.
Golly.
I'm going to Cleveland. And then Good Morning and Good Morning America on Wednesday. They're doing a series on the Middle West, and we're going to the big flower companies. And I think they're going to do a retrospective of, like, I can't remember what people ate in the 1930s and 40s and 50s. I can remember there were
lots of aspics.
What did you eat in the...
Oh, aspics. I'm so glad they've got...
A tomato aspic.
In a ring.
A ring of tomato aspic that had cucumbers and marshmallows in it,
mm-hmm,
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so, filled with Waldorf salad. What did they eat in the 60s? Can you remember? I was trying to think.
The 60s. Well, a lot of Kraft dinner. I remember my father saying to my mother, if that girl ever gets married, I hope he likes Kraft dinner.
What's a Kraft dinner?
Oh, now? It comes in a box. It's macaroni and cheese.
Oh.
Well, I haven't eaten it for years. But
is that all they ate in the 60s? Well, I was over in France then, and we weren't eating that.
I'm trying to think. I can't think. There was a particular fad I don't remember in the 60s. You're supposed to know this. You're the historian.
I'm not a historian.
You were in France.
But I do remember when we were in the diplomatic service, and we were in Norway, and they had a Norwegian-American women's club, and they had a lunch there, and I had just come up from France. And they had one of those salads which looked like a phallic symbol. It was aspic, and it did have marshmallows and grapes in it.
Did you get hysterical?
It was sitting on a little, tiny piece of lettuce. You couldn't hide it under anything.
Of course
not. And they ended with one of these enormous box cakes where you mixed it all up, and it had coconut and whipped cream. I don't know.
You've had more fun than most, haven't you?
Terrible.
Did you really want to be a spy? Is that a true story?
Well, I did want to be rather than a file clerk, but... And I said I'd be very good as well, because I'd be so tall that people would say she couldn't be a spy.
But you see, I was thinking the reverse of that. I was thinking, because you were tall, well, first of all, you could see over everybody's head in some countries. But the other thing was that they would never forget you. And I believe that is supposed to be part of the deal, is that you're supposed to be forgettable, which you ain't.
That's what I thought. That would be a very good cover. I couldn't possibly be a spy because I was too tall.
Yeah.
Yes, well, I ended up as a file clerk. But I had a very interesting time, because at least I knew everything that was going on. This was during World War II.
Yes. Did you ever get to do anything clandestine?
No. And they said, if you try and do anything like that, we'll send you right home. You're here as office help. And this was in Ceylon and in China.
That
was fascinating, though. We're in Kunming and Chongqing. At that time, this was way back in 43, 44, Chongqing was just a village, practically. It was about maybe 100,000 people. Now somebody says it's about 8 million people. I can't believe it.
You haven't been to China lately?
I haven't been back since.
No, you haven't, eh? Would you like to?
Oh, I'd love to on a special food tour. But someone said that the food wasn't as good as it used to be.
A lot of eel.
But it was delicious in those days. But you're lucky here in Vancouver with all of the Chinese and Japanese.
Do you like sushi?
Well, about twice a year.
Oh, really?
I love good Chinese food, particularly the northern Chinese.
Let's go now. Are you going to do any more television specials, maybe? Documentary?
Well, I do Good Morning America every now and then. And I think we're quite definitely going over to Norway in July to do a one-hour special on Norway. And it's being provided by the Norwegian salmon people. So we have to be very careful not to do too much salmon, because it cannot appear to be a commercial.
Certainly not.
No.
This is a Gravlax world.
Well, we were 2 years in Norway, and I just loved it.
What were you doing there?
Well, my husband's in the diplomatic service.
Yes, I knew that.
He was cultural attaché. And I was finishing my first cookbook and giving cooking lessons and trying to learn Norwegian. I can still remember a bit of it.
Let me have it.
Jeg kan snakke litt norsk. Ikke så mye.
Excuse me?
Ja, han glemte så mye.
It's lovely. What is it? I'm sorry, I don't get it.
I can speak a little bit of Norwegian, but I've forgotten a lot of it.
This book that I have, that your last cookbook, yes. Your latest cookbook, mm-hmm. Your last Duchess on the Wall, The Way to Cook. You're not working on another one right now, are
no,
you?
No, I'm never going to do another one. This took me about 8 years to
Famous last words, maybe.
And it's... Well, I like to be with people. I'd much rather do television or talk to you. But I don't... I mean, it just takes an awfully long time to write a book, I think.
It's a solitary act, isn't it?
A very solitary act.
Yeah. And the only, I guess the only joy is that you get to try out the recipes on your pals.
Yeah, it is. Well, they did a beautiful job.
It is. It's a fantastic book. Are you still doing dinner parties? And
oh, yes, always do. I enjoy my profession. I love cooking. It's just, it's fun, and I enjoy teaching very much.
Well, I wish I lived closer to you, I'll tell you that. But then I guess people say that all the time, don't they?
Well,
they like to live in your neighborhood.
I would be happy to have you in.
If you think I'm not going to be around, you're wrong.
Just come to Boston and let me know.
I was there last summer. I'd never been to Boston before.
Oh, it's a nice town.
Yeah, I was very impressed with it.
Yeah.
I actually went to I stayed at a hotel called the Parker House.
Oh,
because
yes.
I was determined to find out whether they invented the Parker House roll. Of course,
you know.
They did.
And they used to have a fried tripe, which I don't think they have anymore.
Well, we could be grateful for something.
Well, they said it was very good. I never tried it.
I thank you very much for coming.
Well, I've loved being here, thank you.
Thank you very much. Julia Child. Her most recent book is called The Way to Cook. It's published by Knopf.